Hello and welcome to another episode of Coaching in Education, the podcast that explores how coaching can transform schools and empower educators. I'm your host, Richard Reid, and today we have a very special guest, Jasmine Miller, author of the newly released book, A Teacher's Guide to Coaching. Jasmine is a former member of the GCI team, and I've had the privilege of working alongside her as a fellow coach and trainer, and I can personally attest to her deep understanding of both the art and science of coaching. Her new book is a timely and transformative resource for educators seeking to cultivate a coaching culture within their schools. In this episode, we'll dive into the practical strategies that Jasmine shares, explore how coaching can foster continuous growth and reflective practice, and uncover what it truly takes to empower teachers, students, and indeed entire school communities. So, whether you're new to coaching or looking to deepen your skills, you're in for a wealth of insights. Jasmine, I'm delighted you're able to join us on the podcast today.
Thank you very much for the invitation. It's lovely to be here.
The pleasure is all mine, Jasmine. Pleasure is all mine. Let's start with your journey into education. Maybe give us a little bit of background about your journey into education so far.
Okay, absolutely. I trained as a teacher in New Zealand at University of Otago. And since then, I guess I've spent about, over now 23 years, mainly based in the UK and working across different countries. So England and Scotland and also Kosovo, Mongolia, China, most recently in the UAE, and in a variety of different roles, from classroom teaching to school leadership, school improvement, coaching, researching, and consultancy. So yeah, I've been really fortunate in my career to date. I guess at the heart of my work, I've always had a deep commitment to inclusion and to supporting both students and teachers to thrive. And over the years, I've developed a strong interest in how coaching can really empower educators and I guess help them navigate challenges, refine parts of their practice. And for me, and through my own experiences of coaching, I really see the benefit of how it can create collaborative, very student-centered environments. That passion led me to explore the impact of coaching, firstly kind of through research. So I did a master's in educational research back in 2019-2020. And I looked at the links between coaching practices, coaching cultures, and the emergence of ecological agency in schools. And I found that whole research that I did just really interesting to explore and having the opportunity to speak with teachers all over the world. And a lot of that work, I guess, inspired me to write my book, A Teacher's Guide to Coaching. And I really wanted to have a book that was designed to make coaching a bit more accessible to teachers and a book that can help provide practical tools and something that can be used in your classroom right away. So, yeah, it's been a really exciting journey to date. And I think throughout it all for me, I'm deeply passionate about helping educators see that transformative impact of coaching and the impact it can have on students and then also like teachers' own growth and well-being as well. It's had a big impact on me. And I think when you experience something like that, then you really want to share that insight, I guess, and hope others might find some benefit to it as well.
Just listening to that journey through education alone, Jasmine, I mean, you mentioned a significant number of different countries to begin with and a significant number of different roles within each of those countries when you were there, which is fantastic. There's almost a book there just covering your educational journey, regardless of coaching. You'd mentioned, and it came to mind, you'd mentioned ecological agency, and I know you've written, you know, extensively around this as well. Just for listeners, just very briefly, if they're asking the question, what is ecological agency?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a hard thing to really. There's a lovely diagram actually, which really helps to capture it. I think if I was to put it into a sentence, ultimately it's how. So in any educator, any teacher that comes into a setting, they bring with them their own set of beliefs and experiences, ways of seeing the world. They bring that to their role. And ecological agency is like working on the concept that we it's not something we get, but we bring things with us, and then depending on the environment and how that environment is made up or conducted, and how the almost like the feel of that environment, all of the elements that are in that environment, how that then enables us to enact that agency. And there's been work done by Dr. Rachel Lofthouse and Professor Mark Priestley, and they both saw those early connections a few years back. And for me, I think having had this experience in coaching myself, I could just see that this is something I really want to explore a bit more, to look into those connections. And this concept of like coaching practices and the culture can really feed into providing the right kind of environment to enable that agency. And then ultimately, if teachers have got that ecological agency and they bring all of these experiences and expertise to a school, there's a real gift there waiting to benefit the students and the community. And if we get that culture right, then we enable that to happen, and teachers thrive. They thrive and they bring that themselves to the workplace, and then they just add to it, you know, make it really flop. So those concepts together are really exciting. And I think there's more to be done in this space. I think given the nature of teaching and considerations across different countries in the world around retaining teachers, getting the best conditions for students and learners, there is something we need to be thinking about in a different way, in a different, I think coaching can bring a lot to that space. So I'm excited to see where that goes. And I think we're seeing more, like I know within Growth Coaching International, I know Chris Munro has done some work in the space too. It's just, for me, thinking differently maybe about those relational elements in schools and how they can work in a different way to benefit the whole community.
It's clearly, just listening to you, Jasmine, something you're very passionate about, and not just showing a real understanding about it, but wanting to see more work done in this area. I think that's come across very, very clearly. So thank you for, you know, for giving that really, really clear description. I've noted a couple of things down here. I suppose as a former principal, the idea of your staff coming in, here are people that are coming to bring something to school with them, and everybody's going to bring something slightly different. And there's a lovely phrase, you know, as you look out at your team, and if, you know, leaders listening to this right now, looking at your team, there's a gift there waiting. Isn't that a lovely statement? There's a gift there waiting. And maybe there's an onus on us as leaders, you know, to open the door to that gift. You know, are we creating the right environment in our schools to provide people an opportunity to show that gift, you know, and you use the word thrive. So that's been really, really helpful. I want to move, you touched a wee bit on this, back into, I suppose, the why behind the book. Okay, so you've taken a considerable amount of time over the last 4 years to essentially write a book. And I mean, you don't just take that on lightly. So, I mean, was there genuinely a particular moment or a particular experience you thought, you know what, this is going to have a big impact, you know, on schools?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think for me, there are probably quite a number of key moments that led me to write the book. I think one that stands out was a conversation with a teacher, and she was on the verge of leaving the profession. She felt completely overwhelmed, I guess drowning a bit in expectations and the speed of how those expectations would come out, struggling with student behaviour that challenged her, and I guess left kind of questioning whether she was making a difference in what she was doing. So thinking about that particular moment, for me as a, you know, as a teacher myself and also a qualified and accredited coach, my approach was using a coaching approach. So using really effective active listening skills, asking very open-ended questions. And ultimately through those processes, helping her to kind of reconnect why she became a teacher in the first place. So over time, she not only kind of regained her confidence, she also started using coaching techniques with her students and transforming her own classroom environment in different ways that, you know, she hadn't necessarily thought possible. And for me, that experience kind of reinforced what I had already been seeing in my own work, how coaching can help teachers thrive, and shifting that focus from constantly trying to sort of fix problems to looking at developing self-awareness, looking at developing your own agency with that, and a sense of possibility. And I think, I mean, I realized that while coaching could benefit every teacher, it is ultimately about something you kind of have to want to engage in. It's something you're interested in and you would like to do. So thinking about how to enable access to training or resources so that people can start to think about how could I use this effectively. And I guess that's the why in terms of writing a book and making it like a teacher's guide to coaching, to make coaching very practical, to make it accessible, and to make it relevant for educators. The book is filled with real life examples and having conversations with teachers and sharing, you know, different teachers have shared their experiences in this. And that's what I love about it as well. My hope is that it empowers educators to bring coaching into their schools in a way that supports like not just their own growth, but they can see the growth of their students as well.
That's been very helpful. And right back at the start of your answer there, Jasmine, it was interesting. I made a little note there. When you're talking to that teacher and she was asking the question, am I making a difference? You know, I would imagine there's a lot of educators out there for a whole host of very legitimate reasons are asking themselves that question. Am I actually making a difference? So to have that, I suppose, coaching approach in that conversation, in many ways, to use that phrase, getting back to your why, you know, and I love that phrase you've used there, you know, a sense of possibility. You know, again, this is very much a forward-thinking, optimistic, you know, sense of hope in many ways, which is what we need to give educators in very, very busy, demanding jobs. And it's not getting, I'm starting to sound old, it's not getting any easier, you know, as you spend more decades in the job rather than just years. But that's a lovely way of, I suppose, of thinking about coaching. And you talk about your book, you know, being very, very practical, which I think is going to be very appealing to teachers. So when we think about this idea of, I suppose, cultivating coaching. If we're going to try, and let's say there's people listening to this and haven't maybe read around coaching very much, so we're trying to define coaching within the educational context, what sets it apart from other sort of support or professional development approaches that teachers maybe already know?
I think that's a great question, because coaching can often be like misunderstood or confused a little bit with mentoring or traditional types of professional development. I think the way I see it, coaching is like an education, is fundamentally relational. So it's built on trust. It's built on deep listening and meaningful dialogue, because there is deep listening happening. I like listening to understand, not listening to respond. And I feel sometimes in schools that happens a lot. The listen to respond. I've just got to be able to tell you something. I'm waiting for you to give me a space and I'm going to get in there. And if we are changing that and listening to understand, it's a very different feel to the conversation. And at its core, coaching creates a reflective space. And I think as well, it's like linked to psychological safety. You can have a reflective space and not feel safe to share in that space, but it has to feel safe. And teachers need to feel safe, especially if they're going to explore their own challenges, their own strengths, and their own goals. And they're not being told what to do. So they are given a space for them to work through that, you know? And I do think being told what to do, given the nature sometimes of schools and initiatives, that can end up happening. And so the space to think and think, how am I going to apply this? What am I going to do? That's not there. And you just get a barrage of things that you need to do. And we need to be able to process that. Everyone needs to be able to process that and think about how they're going to be able to apply that in their situation and what they're going to prioritize. I think traditional professional development, it often focuses on delivering information. And coaching is about a relationship between the coach and the coachee, you know, and it's formal conversation. It's also an approach. It's a process of asking powerful questions. It's a process of suspending judgment. It supports teachers in finding their own solutions rather than like providing advice or prescribing a fixed framework. And I guess through like in a relational approach, that real growth, that self-awareness and that transformation happen. And that's for teachers and for students. What I really love about coaching, though, and I think this challenges schools completely, is that it's non-hierarchical. And what we have in schools, as you know, also former principal, is we have a lot of hierarchy. And we have lots of roles that get made up in the senior and the middle leadership, all these roles. And coaching just cuts through all of that. It's actually about a non-hierarchical process. It's about collaboration. It values teachers' experiences and insights. And it values people, regardless, in your community, it values everybody's experiences, insights, and insights. And I think because coaching is ongoing, rather than just a one-off workshop, it can foster that real lasting change. And then lead on to like embedding reflection and growth into everyday practice. For me, though, coaching in education really empowers teachers to take ownership of their development. It helps them to build confidence. And once again, I think that ultimately leads to the better outcomes for both educators and students. Those two things go hand in hand, don't they? You know,
I think one thing amongst many that you've mentioned there really caught my attention. I mean, you started off straight away saying coaching is fundamentally relational. And you think about school organisations, you know, complex relational places to work in. And it was interesting when you talked about the idea that we need, it's reflective. There are some organisations out there that are providing that reflective opportunity, but not necessarily safe. And I think that's interesting for people to think about as well. So psychological safety obviously is a significant part of this. And then that's a lovely way of putting it, Jasmine, this idea of cutting through the hierarchy, you know, is a lovely way to place coaching, you know, within a school, within an organisation. Like that, it's very, very inclusive. And I think that's, you know, only going to benefit the organisation. So if we're thinking about this idea of, in many ways, like it's over a long period of time, you know, cultivating a culture, cultivating a culture of learning through coaching. Now, any school leader, you know, educator listening to this, learning is our bread and butter. So if we're thinking about cultivating a culture of learning through coaching, are there practical steps that a school can take just to start building this kind of culture?
Yeah, no, I think there are. And I think that's such an important question because coaching is more than individual conversations. It's about a culture. And you mentioned like it takes time. And for me, what I've noticed when I've seen schools that invest in creating a culture carefully and around coaching, that it's sustained for a long time. I can think of one special school in London, and I first connected with them in 2005, and they continue to build on their coaching culture. Schools are transient. Staff come and go. Children come and go. Families come and go. So I think to me that I really admire something like that when I hear about a culture that's still going and coaching's at the heart of it. I think that schools that embrace coaching, they really see a shift in how they collaborate across everybody, all elements of their community, how people trust that school and that place and that sort of professional agency. And I think this has been a big part of my research, but also thinking about the book. There are some very practical steps that schools can take. And where they've taken these kind of steps, that's where I've noticed, like I said, you know, that you see this is seen as a investment over time. For me, when school leaders model a coaching approach, so, you know, they ask open-ended questions in their day-to-day interactions. They listen deeply. They encourage reflection. They set the tone. You know, they set the tone for the entire school. So if they invest time in it, that makes a difference. And I've been there. I've seen myself go from someone who didn't know a lot about coaching to a school leader who knew about it and then was just like, how can I make big changes for myself to and benefit everybody else, you know? And I think when you go through that process, you never look back. You just think of other ways that you can keep bringing that in. But it's critical. And I know there's a lot of research out there around like leaders setting the tone, but in this instance, this is so important. Training staff as well is really important. Providing training to help teachers develop core coaching skills. And by that, I keep going on about it. We talk about listening. Yeah, everyone knows how to listen. But you and I both know, especially with our Growth Coaching International hats on, when we think carefully about listening, we know that a lot of our listening is conversational, usually. And to get that active listening into that deep listening, we really need to be practicing that and practicing that muscle. Questioning is another big thing, isn't it? And like giving constructive feedback, small shifts, replacing kind of directive advice with open-ended questions, all of those things can have a significant impact.
Yeah, I think, and there's a lot in there, Jasmine, and I've noted a few things down. I like the idea when you talk about, yes, it's much more than just a conversation. So culture is a significant thing, and time is a big, big part of that. So it doesn't happen just over a weekend or over a term or even two or three. I loved your phrase where you have to invest carefully. And I'm picturing there investing time carefully as well as finances carefully, because ultimately you used the word sustainable. And yes, you know, schools are there for a long time and people come and go. We've a local school here, just coincidentally in Northern Ireland, celebrating 200 years this month, which is just amazing. And you imagine the number of conversations that building has heard. I mean, I think that's incredible. But if you're trying to develop a culture, you need to invest carefully. I think those are wise words, Jasmine, coming through. And you use that idea of small incremental shifts, which is fantastic. So yes, you've mentioned this idea of, you know, listening is extremely important, and that goes hand in hand with asking powerful questions. If we jump into goal setting. Okay, because we all know as coaches, you know, goal setting is a significant part of coaching. And we're thinking about, I suppose, a practicality. So teachers, you know, in their classroom, being able to effectively support students and in some cases, colleagues setting goals. You know, how do we do that well? And are there any pitfalls that we could avoid?
Yeah, I think the key is finding that balance, isn't it, between like ambition and achievability. It can be really powerful goal setting. And if it's done poorly, it can be really frustrating. So I guess one of the most effective ways to do this is through a coaching style goal setting process. And it focuses on guiding people to set their own goals rather than prescribing them. And for me, when I think about what that involves, a big part of that is really clarifying what they want to achieve. And sometimes, as you know, people need to talk through things. They just need to get out whatever is in the front and get that out and then be given a space to sort of put that out there and then asked again about what it is that they really want to achieve and what it looks like. And I think part of that process is understanding where they are right now at this minute. You know, things shift and change for us all, but let's just take stock of where you are right now. And when someone is able to, I guess, talk through something that they want to achieve and we understand where they are now, then you can start exploring possible ways forward. You know, how much of a gap have we got between where you are now and where you want to get to? And if we're going to commit to an action, committing to something that just helps you edge along, because actually, as we all, you know, I'm sure we've all set goals sometimes that are way out of our, they're ambitious, which is great, but they're just, they're going to take a long time. And then when we really stop and think about it, we go, I needed it to be a lot smaller and manageable, or just take smaller steps. So I think that's really key. And I think sometimes it's like, you know, for example, a student might want to break down a big academic or personal development goal. And instead of saying something like, I want to be better at math, they might want to say, okay, they get to the point where they can go, I will practice multiplication for like 10 minutes every day for the next 2 weeks. So we talk about SMART goals, but actually being clear about what it is, for how long, and it becomes a really focused goal, you know, a focused piece of work. And it, I guess what it does is you're wanting colleagues, enabling them to kind of set goals that align with their values and strengths more. But you did mention pitfalls as well. And I think for me, if the goal is vague and we're not very clear about it, and it's hard to kind of measure how we make some progress towards it, then, you know, we need to make sure it is specific and measurable. And then the success part is easy to recognize then. And then a big part of this is, like, if someone isn't connected to the purpose behind the goal, I guess motivation doesn't really hang around for long. And then if you're looking at sort of tying a goal to a personal value or a long-term aspiration, that can really make it a lot more meaningful, motivating, and, you know, more likely that a person is towards it. Yeah, and I think, like I mentioned, goals that are too big or too fast, like, it is great having ambition. It might not feel manageable though. And so you're kind of setting up a little barrier already in the way for you to go. And it, you know, it can cause disengagement if the goal isn't broken into kind of more like tiny steps. And I think the biggest thing is like celebrating the progress. Too often we like, you work through something and then it's on to the next thing and on to the next thing. I've certainly done that many a time. And if we don't take stock in terms of just acknowledging when you do make a small win, that makes a huge difference to your own motivation. And just acknowledging it for yourself, I do think that makes a big difference.
I think that's fascinating, because we're thinking obviously about students and we're also thinking about colleagues, you know, because teachers are going to come across both of those scenarios. We're thinking about, you know, setting goals, helping people, you know, come up with, you know, sensible goals, focused goals, realistic goals, goals that are, you know, connected with their values, you know, that you're connected to the purpose. You mentioned the word motivation. There's an awful lot going on in there. When it comes to, I suppose, sharing a bit of feedback in those conversations, you know, that can be difficult. And you alluded to that, Jasmine, you know, sometimes people's choice of goals maybe aren't great. So, I mean, are there tips for being able to offer feedback that, to use a phrase, really supports growth rather than sometimes the easy option, shutting somebody down, which we're all guilty of in many occasions?
Yeah, I do. I think a big part of that is shifting from evaluation to exploration. So, you know, we in the coaching space, we often talk about, you know, staying in the not knowing, keeping that curiosity. And I think, yeah, like you said, we're all guilty of this. It's the nature sometimes of the product of the environment. And particularly in schools, we can go in we've made a judgment and this is how we see it. We've got to always remember, you know, someone's observation of something is their observation, right? That's their perspective. It's not this is the one way of the how it will be. And I do think sometimes we need to kind of remember that, have that at the forefront. I think when we start with curiosity and we're asking how someone feels that went for them, we're encouraging more reflection and we're encouraging more of a two-way conversation rather than something that's imposed. I think we all thrive on something around our strengths. So acknowledging what worked well, I think it's such an important thing to do. and hearing that. It's all sometimes, I don't know if it's a British thing. We often, New Zealand was very influenced by Britain, but that thing where we find it hard to acknowledge things that we do well. But it's such an important thing when we think about coaching as well and how it can be used to support the space. People grow more when they build on what's already working. So acknowledging what's going well just adds to that, doesn't it? And it just adds to that, and it builds that confidence, it builds our self-esteem. And that goes for anybody, student, adult, whoever. I think it's so important. It provides a good foundation of confidence, and that then helps move into areas of growth. We need to feel confident and competent before we can go on about growth. If we're not feeling competent and confident, it's very hard, and the trajectory kind of goes downhill if we start going on to growth already. So focusing on concrete behaviours is really key, So something like, I noticed students were more engaged when you asked open-ended questions. What would happen if you used that approach more often, do you think? Rather than, dwelling on, okay, this didn't work this time, shift it to what's one small change you'd like to try next time? What's just one small thing? It's trying to keep the conversation about progress, but also about making growth feel achievable. That's the idea. You want someone coming out of a conversation around feedback feeling energized to go and do something now to help build on that. Yet that's how you want them to come out. You don't want them to come out of that feeling depleted and here we go again. It's so important. And great feedback should stretch someone, but it should also make them feel really safe to take risks. When I've seen cultures that are built on strong foundations, people seek out feedback. They seek it out. Can you come in and can you see this? I'd really like to show you what I'm doing. I'm not too sure yet. But there's a confidence there. And there's a trust and there's a safety. I respect what you've got to share. I'm really interested in hearing what you think. And then it's that's just such a, that feeling in your culture is a very special thing, I think. And, feedback ultimately is far more effective when people feel a sense of ownership. Just far more. You feel, you're more engaged, more kind of connected to what's going on. You feel like you're in control of the learning, and that's important. You need to feel empowered. And you want people to feel empowered, but also excited about that next growth step. And nobody's the finished product. We're all growing and developing. But getting that balance is so important. I come back to coaching, the hierarchical thing. It can feel, if it's not done well, feedback just feels like, here you come in, you're telling me this as an expert or the, and it's not about that. It shouldn't be about that. And so coaching approaches can really help change that whole atmosphere. And it takes time to change that, because if that's how a culture currently feels, it takes quite a bit of work to build up trust to change that kind of approach, right?
Yeah, and I'm sensing almost a new book coming out on feedback alone, which is terrible. But this is really, really useful and helpful stuff, for our listeners. I mean, there's an amazing number of things in there. That phrase, where we need to shift from evaluation to exploration.
Yeah,
I mean that's a simple idea, but that's a discipline in itself. So being able to discipline ourselves, as educators, to be intentional about moving away from evaluation more towards exploration. So that idea of starting with curiosity, which will lead, as you say, to reflection. And then being able to, to build somebody else up in that environment where they feel confident and they feel competent, having gone through that process. And that's ultimately what leads to growth. Wouldn't it be lovely when you think about feedback, wouldn't it be lovely to work in an organization, in a school, where the majority of people actively seek out feedback? I mean, isn't that amazing? So there's a great way to measure, a coaching culture in your school. How actively do members of staff, students, whoever it might be, actively seek out feedback? Come and look at what I'm doing. Tell me what you think. And they're saying that in a very invitational way. So that's really, really helpful. When we think about the whole area, and you touch on this in your book as well, and this is a massive area, this could be another hour and a half, the whole area of emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
Okay, so how can coaching help teachers and students develop this, you know, unbelievably important thing, this idea of emotional intelligence? And you know, are there changes that you've seen where this has become, you know, a focus?
I think emotional intelligence is a game changer in education. Like, for me, the route into coaching, I was very fortunate. I had a forward-thinking head teacher who invested in his staff team, and he brought in a coach, and we had days in our academic year, professional development around emotional intelligence and understanding ourselves better so that we could work more cohesively in teams, right? And I remember thinking back, like, okay, this is really interesting. We're all thinking about ourselves. We had a wonderful lady, Kath Corey, came into our school, and she said, okay, here's a question for you. You're going to IKEA. How do you prepare for that? And everybody had their different ways of doing that. Some people like got the measuring tape out that exactly had the space that they needed, this new thing measured out. Others just looked at it and went, yep, I think it might fit. I'm going to go in and see what I can find. And others would just turn up and see what bargains can. So we were doing this, and lots of fun activity, but really it showed the diverse nature of humans, you know, humans first. Let's look at what we're all about. So diverse. And yet here we all are. This was actually a complex and profound school. So we worked in like teams of 4 to 5 adults with young people, and we all needed to work tightly together to be as effective as we could be. So it was such an insight in terms of let's think about ourselves. And I think that's what it's all about. And it is one of the most effective ways to develop, I think, thinking about how coaching and emotional intelligence fit together, because it's all about self-awareness. It's about building up emotional kind of regulation, empathy, communication. They're all key components of emotional intelligence. So, you know, coaching encourages teachers and students to pause, reflect on their thoughts, reflect on their emotions, how they've reacted to something. And we often talk about, what did you notice? You know, oh, what did you notice about how you felt when you had that conversation or your reaction to that? It's like recognizing triggers in yourself, in the classroom, understanding how your emotions kind of influence your teaching. And I think for students, it's about kind of identifying how their feelings kind of impact on their own behavior and their own learning, and trying to understand something like what's behind that reaction. We often focus on what we see. You know, here's the behavior. This is what we're seeing right now. We need to understand what's behind that. So emotional regulation, coaching can help, I guess, support individuals to kind of navigate their emotions in a more intentional way, maybe a more constructive way. You know, when we're thinking about really powerful coaching questions, like what could help you regain focus right now? It's about, I guess, encouraging that sort of self-regulation, problem solving, and allowing an individual to kind of take ownership of their emotional responses, rather than depending solely on something external for that. Yeah, it's such a powerful tool. I remember working on sets of like I statements. So working, if you're in a conflict situation with a colleague, you know, and you're in a difficult situation, and we were really supported through creating scripts like, I feel like this, and I feel like this when your behavior does this. So not making it about the person, but about the behavior. So being able to support colleagues to talk through something that's difficult in a respectful way, and not making it personal to the person, like not making it feel personal and then straight away feeling defensive. And emotional intelligence just sets the parameters for that. And I think that's really powerful. And it's powerful for like colleagues and teachers. It's super powerful if like teachers are modeling that for students. And if students work that out together and are given those kind of parameters, it can be really, really powerful, because it is essential for learning, but it's essential for life. It's, you know, like if you can start off learning about that in school, the long-term impact of that is huge, really huge. Now, you know, I think early on in my teaching career, I was lucky to come across this process, I guess, and think about, well, maybe I've had some crossover before, but if it was in school, I mean, that's why I say it's a game changer. It can make a real difference to how you approach life in general, navigate all of the different things that come up as you transition from school to adulthood and then the long adulthood in front of you. But yeah, it's a really important aspect.
Think about your listeners who are listening into this, leaders and educators. I mean, who's not going to want those skills developed within the staff, within the students, within parents? I mean, we've talked about the whole school community. And that was that idea, awareness, you know, being self-aware, but also aware of others, you know, which is part and parcel what emotional intelligence is all about. But I think one thing you've mentioned, and I can resonate with this, is the idea of noticing. You know, as a coach, a big part of what we do is what do we notice? What do we recognise? And quite often it's what isn't being said or what isn't being discussed, you know, and where you've built good levels of trust within your team, you can ask those questions. You know, you can start to notice what's not being said, what people maybe are avoiding, and where there's a good level of trust, you can then, you know, broach those questions, which I think helps. It comes back to that complex relational system that you're working within. So the coaching approach really does help in many ways open that up. If we think about, I mean, again, there's going to be folks here listening to this, brand new pins to this, you know, this is we've read around this thing maybe a wee tiny bit, and obviously they're going to buy your book, that's a given. What would you say, thinking very practically, where's the best place to start and try and make sure this isn't just another initiative? What are a couple of simple tips?
Yeah, I think for me, the big one is it's invitational. What I've noticed is when schools do this well, introduce coaching well, it's invitational. And that's the crux of coaching. No one should force it onto you. You should never feel like I've got to do this thing now. It's invitational, and you approach that and you engage with it in your own time when you're wanting to do that. Now, often, we've talked about this a bit, but yes, there are a lot of initiatives that come into school. So for me, when something's invitational, like coaching, it's also really important that coaching is given time to explain what it is, how it can be used, share examples of how it's been used in other places, because there's lots of different ways. There's no one way. And when you have a small group of people who really buy into this, the magic of that is that they share that feeling and what they've found out about it, you know, and it makes a real difference to how it's bought in. Often, unfortunately, I see coaching just quickly linked to performance management, like whack those two together. Saw that just recently, and you just take a bit of a deep breath, and people don't really know what it is. And yeah, but I think for me, sometimes that there's so fragile, that bit between that immense, incredible power that can bring to your community versus it just slipping off the radar because of the way it's placed in your environment. And it comes back to the thing that I mentioned. If the care is there, it's really thought about in a different way. And the chance of it falling off into a huge pile of initiatives happens so easily sometimes. It's like a fine line, you know, depending on how it's brought along. And, you know, it can feel very top down if it's not thought through carefully. Inviting teachers to engage with it voluntarily is so important. Start small, start informal, using coaching styles, using coaching approaches, like I mentioned, you know, those ways of being, which I love that phrase, that way of being, and how you have your everyday interactions. And others that are interested in it, their ways of being and their interactions will mirror a bit of that as well. So starting small. I think peer coaching is a lovely way to start. I really do. I think practicing coaching with a trusted colleague And, you know, schools have a lot of adults in them, and finding your tribe, finding your connections, I think that's important. And then trying something like this together is just wonderful. Often, you know, your coaching naturally crosses that sort of professional side of you and your personal life, and it gives you that option to see this can go with me, you know, across all elements. I don't just have to see it as this thing here. And I think when you experience being truly listened to, we know that that is such, I mean, that in itself is just an incredible feeling. So if you've got people in your workplace who enable that to happen, that's super special, and you just want more of that. You just feel truly listened to, and I think that's important. Using the coaching with the students too, I think you've got this lovely opportunity in schools to embed coaching by modelling it with students and teachers changing their approach, or if they've already got this approach, continuing to ask reflective questions of your students. You know, what do you think helped you succeed in this task? You know, what strategy might you try next? Changing the way, it's like, I always remember when I first started in special education, and I remember learning some really useful advice around, if you're going to tell somebody to stop doing something, don't say stop running or stop jumping on that chair, because when someone's in that moment, they hear that jumping on the chair, oh, I'll do that. So you have to stop yourself and go, put your feet on the ground or take a step backwards. So you change, you're telling them what you would like them to do instead of telling them what you want them to stop. And I think there's something about, you know, it depends on you as a person. So when you explore coaching, there's often that reflection piece where you think, oh, I use a bit of that already. That's always a lovely thing when it resonates with, I do a bit of that. And so, and it will draw people who have these skills there. So I think that's a really important thing to mention. And then you just, you ask your questions to your students, you listen, and that connection's really strong, because the students, they build a trust with you really quickly around, you have asked me that question and you're trying to understand how I see it. And you're taking the time to listen to me to understand. And they don't forget. Students, they just do not forget. They'll come back again because they're feeling that, like, feeling that trust and being really listened to. And, you know, coaching builds student independence and self-awareness. It can really shift the way conversations happen in schools. And a lot of conversations happen in the schools, let's face it. If coaching becomes a way of thinking and relating to others, it's naturally going to integrate across other elements. And it really can. Like, I remember coming back from, I would go for my, like, 4 days at a time part of my coaching accreditation. I'd come back into the school. The next month I'd go away again, come back. And every time I came back, I'd be like, oh, I can introduce different ways into my meetings. I can introduce different ways into these conversations that I have with this group of the board. So it just constantly can just go across all elements of what you're doing in schools. It's so much more than a technique, though. I think it's a mindset. That's what happens. And then if you don't, I think very quickly, if that becomes your mindset, and then you seek, you know, as a teacher going through your career, you will seek places that enable you to have that mindset, or you sense that there's that mindset there and that culture there. So you start to become clearer about the types of places you want to be a part of. It probably comes in your interviews that you have and opportunities that come up to see if there's that culture and mindset that's important to you. And I think that's important as well in terms of knowing what it is you want.
Yeah, that this is all exceptionally helpful. Jasmine, it's just as if you've just finished writing a book about this. But no, there's so much there, and I've noted down and underlined the word invitational. I think that's absolutely key. You know, for people at the start of this, it's very much invitational, and it's starting small, and it's not something that's done to you. And that's sometimes maybe where the performance element does sneak in a little bit. And sometimes people's ears prick up, think, oh, here, there's something that, you know, those teachers over there in that department, you know, all they need is a good dose of coaching, and that'll improve. And that's what we're trying to steer completely clear of. And that's come across very clearly today, which has been really, really helpful. And I actually think myself, when I'm thinking about that word initiative, you know, it's not an initiative. It's many ways a basic human right. You've talked today about, you know, people being listened to. You know, right back at the start, you've said when your staff come in, pupils come in, or parents come in, governors, whoever it might be, there's a gift there waiting. You know, so it's almost, you know, it's like a human right. You know, this is how we, like Chris Munro again would use the phrase, this is just how we talk around here. And that's where the cultural element, I think, comes in. So that's been really helpful. I'm going to finish off with one interesting question. This is more of a personal reflection. So with all of your experience, and that's been terrific, and we're gleaning from that today, and we'll do so from the book as well. If you could go back, right back to those early teaching days, with what you know now about coaching, is there something or one thing that you might do a wee bit differently?
Oh, yes. I mean, I think I mentioned earlier, I was very fortunate to gain insight into coaching through emotional intelligence, I think, initially, early in my teaching career. And it came at a time when I transitioned from a mainstream teacher, and I'd been doing that for about 4 or 5 years, to work with very profound and complex learners. And so in that role, I very quickly learned to listen deeply. I had other adults working in my classroom who knew those children and the processes way more than I did. So I very quickly had to listen a lot to understand each of the individuals and their very individual, unique ways of being. So that was super helpful. I learned, I guess, to really lean on my experienced colleagues, drawing out their knowledge. And I think if I could step back into those early days with what I know now about coaching, the biggest shift that I would make is probably how I approached conversations. I think that is the biggest learning curve, and conversations that you have with your whole community, and with yourself, because that shift in terms of how you can use a coaching approach. When I think about, like many new teachers, you become your own toughest critic. You know, that's a given. And I'd go home, I'd think about what could I have done better, instead of thinking about what went well, like probably 99.9% of the time. And I think what coaching has taught me, through Pathway of Emotional Intelligence as well, is the power of self-reflection without judgment. Because actually, when you are your own biggest critic, that can get in the way of truly reflecting and actually doing your best thinking. So as coaching's had played more and more of a role in my life, you become more confident in who you are and what you do and what's important. You also become so much more confident in what you need to think. And so, you know, I need time to mull this over. I need to ask these questions of myself. You know, those things become really fundamental. So coaching has taught me that power of self-reflection without self-judgment. And that would have been super handy to have known back then. And then I think, well, this is part of growth and development, isn't this? This is the joy of how life is. And I think, yeah, you can, it's something that I guess the good news is it's never too late to make that shift, you know? And that's why I'm so passionate about helping teachers bringing coaching into their practice. There's so many benefits to it. And I think about, like I'd mentioned this earlier, just thinking about how teachers turn up and show up in classrooms in this day and age, and all the different pressures and joys that happen in schools. I think we just have to kind of like recognize that there's ways of doing things that can really keep on supporting teachers in their schools, and in their own, you know, taking that from school into their own whole life, I guess. Yeah, and it's important, and I think it's never too late.
I love that phrase you use, you're listening to individuals. You know, when it comes to anybody in a school, regardless of role, because we're cutting through the hierarchy, you know, when we're thinking about coaching, But actually, to go into school, you know, tomorrow, whatever the next day is, you're going to be in the school building, looking around you from the car park on the way in through the building and throughout the day, there's an opportunity to listen to individuals. I think that's a lovely way of thinking through, you know, for young teachers who are starting out, you know, there's an opportunity to take a coaching approach and listen to individuals. But also, like you said, Jasmine, you're looking back over, you know, quite a long career to date and a lot of different growth and development, yes. And it comes down to that phrase, it's never too late to start. And I think that's what we want to really get across to folks today, is that it's never too late to start. It's that lovely phrase where, you know, people will say the best time to plant a tree was 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And the second best time is today. You know, so if somebody's listening right now and thinking, well, like, I should have started this coaching, you know, many years ago, no, the best time is today. In your words, it's never too late. Jasmine, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today and for sharing such valuable insights from your new book. We want to wish you every success with it. I'm sure you are relieved to get to this stage and actually see it in print and up on the bookshelves. Who knows, this might be the start of a number of publications to come. For our listeners, if you're inspired by what you have heard today, I highly recommend getting your hands on a copy. This book is packed with actionable strategies and, as we've heard, real-world examples that can help you create a powerful coaching culture in your school. As always, please take a moment to check out our website, where you'll find access to a wide range of free resources as well as further information on our coach training courses. For now, thank you for listening, and I look forward to joining you in the next episode of Coaching and Education, where theory and good intentions meet reality.